This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. Appreciate it. Tim Murtaugh is going to be with us. He's ran the 2020 Trump campaign. Can't wait to get his impression. Just talked to RFK Jr. on Fox and Friends. We'll bring you some of that. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West at the bottom of the hour talking about things that matter most for me. It's the border. To me, it's the number one issue in the country. It really is. And it's Donald Trump's issue, as you know. How about this? And we'll talk about it later. But do you know that they are flying people in by the thousands without even telling the governors in that state? And you know what state they're going to first? They apply in another. They go in an app and they apply for asylum here. And we fly them in and evaluate them. You know where they're mostly going? Texas and Florida, Miami and Houston. I wonder why. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
Yeah, he was quoted in the courtroom. My office quoted him as saying, "I shoot people." And that is one of the reasons that we do believe he is an amazing flight risk. And he made it very clear that this is what he does. He shoots people.
It's unbelievable. That's Melinda Katz. She's with the Queens DA. My name is Lindy Jones, and I shoot people. Those are the words of the driver of the Kia that Jonathan Dealer walked up on and was shot from and killed. 200 cops packed a courtroom to see this guy indicted. It's part of a bigger problem of lawlessness and fearlessness among criminals. They think they can commit any crime and not pay a price. We discussed the national outrage.
Number two.
This clears the way for the court to finally look at what many of us view as an obscene judgment. I mean, this number was pulled out of nowhere. When you drill down on the order, there's really nothing there.
That is Jonathan Turley, the Trump trials. DT puts up his DTJ puts up his $175 million bond, but gets a massive gag order for his New York criminal trial. We'll look at the issues that really got on Trump's ire up.
Number one.
It's horrifying. Our numbers among younger voters, particularly black, younger blacks, they think that our politics is just a bunch of bull.
2024, Trump back on the campaign trail, Michigan and Wisconsin, states he can and must win. He currently leads by 6 to 8 points in Michigan and dead heat in Wisconsin. And Dems begin to panic on their withering support among young people, but does a Florida 6-week abortion ban. Now abortion's on the ballot in Florida. Does that put Florida in play? We'll discuss it because it does mean a lot if you look at these past elections. I don't care for a second. It doesn't matter if you're pro-life, pro-choice. I'm just talking about pure politics. There's a lot of people who are Republican that feel as though they want it back up to 15 weeks and might vote that way. So we'll discuss that. But let's discuss where we left off, and that is the campaign. So James Carville was talking about the lack of interest in Joe Biden from the youth vote. And he brings that up because I guess he's got a podcast. It looks terrible, but he does speak his mind. Cut 14.
It's horrifying. Our numbers among younger voters, particularly black, younger blacks, younger Latinos or whatever, but whatever, younger, I don't know, like younger people of color, particularly males. We're not shedding them. They're leaving in the droves. Don't take time to understand their lives. They think that all politics is just a bunch of bull. People arguing back and forth. Here I am, I'm 26 years old. There's given interest rates, insurance costs, everything that's going on in my life. I don't think I'll ever own a house. Living with my parents, I just think the whole thing is just bull.
And why is that? I'm not saying it's all a president, but if you talk about inflation, what about the massive spending that caused inflation? They caused the interest rate to go up because economists say that's the only way to get inflation to go down. And the fact that it ballooned up to 9% and now goes up 3%, Understand, it's still up. The 9% stays, and the next year, the 3% on the 9%. Do you understand that? That is why people say, wait a second, I'm making the same amount of money. It's just not going as far. The beers that you buy, the transportation costs, little things like Democrats put congestion pricing in New York City. You know what that is? If you cross the city, you pay $15. Well, if you're a restaurant worker, you work in a kitchen, you're a firefighter, that matters. You go across the city twice, in and out, $30 a day, 5 days a week or 7 days a week. And you say to yourself, well, I don't have any extra income. What you do is you either raise that person's salary or you raise the price of the goods at the place that person works with. Some way, somehow, everyone's paying more. And you look around and go, you know, I don't know what it is. But the middle class lifestyle is harder to reach, especially if you're young, trying to get a foothold. Look, we have it better on our worst day than any country on their best day. But we're just judging by what we're living through right now. And you have one person trying to cut regulations and cut taxes in order to get things to give you more control of your life and your dollar. And the other one saying, give it to me. And the problem is rich people. I love this. And then we'll welcome in Tim Murdoch after this. Fareed Zakaria, who's extremely bright. I watch his show every Sunday, but he hates Trump. So he can't even think clearly on Trump. But he pointed out the hypocrisy of what Democrats are doing, going after Trump as if he's the only one that ever had controversial issues in his background. And the average person, not the one dug in, but the average person, not the Jim Acosta, but the average person sees the hypocrisy every day. And we remember from Bill Clinton to Hillary Clinton to Stacey Abrams doing the same thing they think that Donald Trump has cornered the market on. Cut 16.
I think the point here is liberals are meant to believe in free speech. That is one of the foundational values of liberalism. And if you're going to say you're going to deplatform 85 million Americans, that's a lot of people. They say, no, it's not about that. It's that she lied. Well, you know, Bill Clinton lied under oath. I think last time I checked, he's been on MSNBC. They say, well, she's an election denier. Well, Stacey Abrams was an election denier about her own election, and they've had her on. Liberals often trigger backlash when they use illiberal means to get to their ends. You know, they're like, we're going to do what it takes. And the truth is, and I mean liberalism in a broad sense, liberal democracy, freedom of speech, constitutional, these are precious inheritances that we have. The way you're going to defend it, the way you're going to move it forward is by not cheating, not cutting corners, not having double standards.
And fundamentally, he was answering and answered a bigger question about Ronald McDaniel being told don't go to NBC because the inmates decided to tell the news director and all the executives that she's not worthy of their air, which is insanity. Insanity. She ran the RNC for 2 terms, 8 years, 10 years. And especially with that political family, she grew up in the Romney family, the sense of moderate Republicans, which she would have brought a perspective in there, and she probably would have been critical of Trump to a degree, which might not have made Donald Trump happy. I'll talk about that with Tim Murdoch next and talk about the border with Colonel West after that. I don't want to take up too much time, so we'll get to those two things in a second. But I have a lot more to cover, including the Israel strike on those Iranian Al-Quds Force members that were in Syria. This is exactly what you do if you're Israel and you swear that no one will ever try to wipe you off the face of the earth again without you having a say in it. This is the stuff you do. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, I've always liked him, and I've known him actually for a long time. I've liked him. He's a very liberal guy. He's probably the most liberal person in the race, including the Green Party. So I think he's probably going to hurt Biden. I don't see him hurting me. Our people are solid. We have a very, very solid core, and I think that core is 60%.
And Donald Trump telling me last week that RFK being in the race and not going anywhere, naming a running mate, is not going to hurt him. Does Tim Murtaugh believe that, former communications director for Trump 2020? He ran that campaign. He's author of a brand new book, Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It, My Escape from Addiction, and Shot at Redemption on the Trump campaign. We'll talk to that in a second. But Is Trump spinning there, Tim?
No.
Or do you believe the same thing?
Yeah, I believe the same thing. And I was just in the studios with you guys on Fox and Friends, and I saw RFK Jr.'s hit with you guys. And I think he is a real threat to Joe Biden. I think there are a lot of disaffected Democrat voters out there who are looking for somewhere else to be because they don't like what Joe Biden's doing. And I think RFK presents them with a place to go. And I think he definitely hurts Biden.
For the Green Party?
Yeah.
I mean, he's for the new Green Deal. I mean, how could any Republican vote for anyone that's for the new Green Deal?
No, those are Democrat
issues. And I'm not saying
I don't
like him as a person.
He's a very impressive guy, but he has so many elements to the things that he supports and the things that he believes in that are very, very leftist that really, truly, I can only see him as a potential candidate for liberals to consider.
But he said something interesting that you don't hear in politics. I thought Trump was wrong on the border until I went there.
Yeah. So that's the thing, too. But so he's sort of befuddles Democrats, too, because he just told America that Trump is right on the border, that Biden's border crisis is a disaster. So he's right. I mean, that's inarguable, really. But most politicians would not admit that. You know, he's running against Donald Trump. And he just on national TV said that Trump is right about the number one issue, according to every poll that voters care about, is the border. He just said that Trump is right. Politicians don't do that.
Well, you know, everything is tactics. And he's so smart. He mentioned to me he was 14 years old. He was at the event when his dad was killed. Mm. So he knew about politics.
Can you imagine?
So you're old enough then to see us all in front of you. And, you know, he remembers his uncle. So he's got a great perspective. And I know I'm always aware that people like you, there's a reason why you say stuff. He said to me about what he thinks about Biden. He said that that Joe Biden, it's not that he's old, is that he's lifting too much of his left wing. And I thought to myself, okay, but aren't you to the left?
Right. I mean, a lot of his support, he's going to count on the left wing. And it's true. Biden definitely is being run by the leftist wing of his party. It's absolutely true. The stuff that Biden comes out, these aren't things that Joe Biden, the senator, believed for 40 or 50 years when he was in the U.S. Senate. I mean, Trans Visibility Day that he declared on the same Sunday as Easter Sunday, the old Joe Biden would not have done
such things. Well, you know what he said? When the speaker criticized him and they asked him, they said, you know, the speaker came out and criticized you for Trans Visibility Day. He said, he's misinformed. I didn't do that.
Yeah.
And it turns out he signed it.
Yeah. But they're trying to play a game of semantics that, you know, oh, no. It's March 31st. It just also happened to be Easter. You know, well, was it Easter? It was, in fact. It was, in fact, Easter. So.
All right. The name of the book, Tim, is Swing Hard In Case You Hit It, My Escape from Addiction and Shot at Redemption on the Trump Campaign. Swing Hard In Case You Hit is what your dad said to you before you went to baseball practice.
Yeah, I come, as we've talked off the air here, I come from a baseball family. My grandfather was Danny Murtaugh. He was the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates for 15 seasons and won the World Series twice, 1960 and 1971. And my dad played baseball also, was an All-American in college and was a catcher up to AAA. And you can see that the baseball talent gets watered down by generation in my family because I was good enough to play varsity baseball in high school, and that's where it stopped. But when I would leave the house for baseball practice, my dad would say to me, just kidding, he would say, hey, swing hard in case you hit it. And, you know, that phrase stuck with me. And I think it's a pretty good philosophy for life. If you're going to do anything in life, you might as well make the effort, because if you actually succeed in what you're doing, you will have wanted to put some oomph behind it, because your success will be greater if you tried hard. So, you know, swing hard just in case you hit it.
And you talk about in your book, 4 years after you put down your last drink, you're on Air Force One flying around with President Trump trying to get him reelected. That journey is what you write about, though, right? You were drinking hard.
Yeah, I was definitely a hard drinker. I have two DUIs in my past, and I have a number of other arrests for lesser alcohol-related things like public intoxication, stuff like that. And I was in a really bad way, and I was about to go to jail. I got arrested again for public intoxication while I was on probation for my second DUI. And I'd already spent 10 days in jail for the second DUI, but I had 80 days suspended hanging over me. And if I got convicted of another alcohol-related offense, I was going to have to serve those 80 days. And so I got arrested, and I got, you know, some really good advice. And the lawyer told me, you know, go to rehab, go to a slew of AA meetings and get a thing signed that says you were there. Have the interlock device put back on your car voluntarily. Go do community.
Would you blow into it in order to?
Right, in order to be able to start your car. Right. And go do, 100 hours of volunteer service. So I went to an animal shelter and volunteered at an animal shelter and then went into court and presented my, you know, just pretty basically prostrated myself in front of the court, the judge and the prosecutor said, OK, listen, we will not prosecute this case, but I don't want to see you anywhere near this courthouse again. Otherwise, you know, this is coming down on you like a ton of bricks.
So rehab was helpful, but it didn't work.
I went to rehab 5 times and I learned a lot about myself, and I would stay sober when I got out. But for me, everybody comes at sobriety in a different way. You know, everybody's takes a different course. This book that I wrote is not a how-to guide. It's just my story. But people might be able to take parts of it and apply it to their own lives. And so what I needed was the threat of losing everything. If I had gone to jail for 80 days, I was going to lose. I was working on Capitol Hill at the time for a member of Congress, Lou Barletta from Pennsylvania. What a guy. I really owe a lot to him because he never gave up on me and didn't fire me when he should have. He should have fired me, and he didn't. And I'm really grateful to President Trump for giving me a shot.
But you weren't drinking by the time you
were. No. May 16th, 2015 is when I finally took my last drink, and I needed the threat of going to jail for a long time to do that.
Do you think you were born an alcoholic?
I think it's hereditary. I think the science says that it's hereditary. My father is a recovering alcoholic. That's what you call it. He hasn't had a drink since 1987, so he quit drinking.
Did he recognize your behavior? Did he try
to
jump in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it was through him and my mother that I went to rehab so many times that as I did. I went 5 times, and it would stick for a little while. But then I really – like I said, everybody needs to come at it in their own way, and that's the way – I tell my story in here. And, it's not pretty, a lot of it. And I don't tell stories on other people because you're not supposed to. One of the tenets of Alcoholics Anonymous is that you can tell on yourself, but, you know, you're not supposed to share other people's problems. And so I don't name names or anything like that. But I talk about all the different problems that I have. And it was ugly. And anybody who has gone through it or has family who has gone through it, and you see what happens and just the ridiculous choices that you make and the dangers that you put yourself in and dangers to other people that you cause, it's a terrible thing. I thank God that I was able to get out of it. And it took the shock of real jail time staring me in the face to do it. And I decided to write this book to help other people, because when I was in rehab, I would spend a lot of time in the gift shop and I would buy all these books. And they had the medical textbooks and stuff, and those were fine. They tell you what alcohol does to the body and drugs do to the body and all that. But I wanted to read the stories of people telling their own versions of what happened to them. Those were much more instructive to me. And that's what I wanted to write with this book, because I figure if somebody picks it up and just flips through it for about 10 minutes and they don't take a drink during that 10 minutes, then it was worth writing. You know, if that only happens one time,
right,
then it was worth it.
When did it stop becoming enjoyable? In the beginning, you have a beer, you're hanging out with your friends, it's great. When did, for you, did it go, uh-oh, I'm drinking by myself.
Oh, boy.
And I'm not going, I'm not celebrating anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, at first, man, it was so great. Boy, I loved it so much when I was in high school and college and all that. And then into my, you know, young adult years, I guess it probably really started to take a turn around the age of 30. I guess I'm 54 now. And so around the age of 30, it really started to take a turn. And then by the time I reached 40, I mean, it was the center of my life. It was the center of every day. I took a drink many times before my feet even hit the floor.
Would people be able to pick up that you had a drink?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought that I was fooling them, but, you know, you use various chewing gum, and I would be overloaded with cologne trying to mask the smell because I know I give it off. I'm one of those people where it just comes out of my pores and you can tell. So I used all kinds. I had to, because I was drunk at work, there's lots of day drinking that went on. I was drunk at work on Capitol Hill with Lou Barletta when I worked for Congressman Barletta. He should have fired me. I even went and I told them that I had low blood sugar and that was my problem because I discovered that it has the similar symptoms to being drunk sometimes in some people. So that's what I told my coworkers, that I had low blood sugar. In fact, I was just hammered. Right? I even went and got little sugar pills to take and as a prop.
Tim Murda, you got to pick up this book because it's inspirational and informative. Swing Hard in Case You Get Hit, My Escape from Addiction and Shot at Redemption on the Trump Campaign. And Trump liked you because it was a redemption story.
Yes.
He knew all
about it before he hired me. Yes.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Joe Biden's gigantic Achilles heel, and he's the one who loves to show it to us because he caused this problem. During the debates, Joe Biden said, come, when he was asked what his message is to people who are trying to come to America illegally. He said, come. He raised his hand when he was asked if he should support decriminalizing people who come into America illegally.
That's Ari Fleischer. He remembers. Ari's a great communicator, obviously. You set the table for this, and what the administration is leaning on every time. We had bipartisan legislation. We had passed. Republicans want the issue. Donald Trump won't let them. Now they're going to do this. The good news is nobody's buying it. I think the president's plus 15 when it comes to immigration. And we know this president's not even engaged in it. All we know, too, is the administration's still suing Texas not to put in SB 4, which would allow them to either jail or immediately deport illegal immigrants when they cross in between the port of entry. And they're fighting it. Remember, they're the ones who took the floats out of the Rio Grande that would have stopped them from swinging across. You don't do that if you want to enforce the border. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West with us, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, welcome back. So Ari Fleischer just recounts who set the table for this. How do you feel about the Democrats constantly leaning back on that bipartisan legislation by Lankford and Murphy?
Well, what happened, and it's good to be with you, Brian, is the Republicans gave the Democrats a get-out-of-jail-free card. That's why they keep going back to it. Instead of staying unified and saying that, look, President Biden reversed the 90-plus executive orders that you issued, unconstitutional executive orders, that reversed the situation there on the border. This belongs to you. And recently you just heard the White House spokesperson, Karine Jean-Pierre, say that everything was fine. That it was the Trump chaos that was caused, and the Republicans are causing the chaos. And you're right. They're the ones standing in the way of Texas being able to do what they refuse to do, which is protect and secure the border. And think about this, Brian. Those 300-some-odd who stormed the border, knocked down the fence, trampled over National Guard members, tried to take some of the members, tried to take their weapons, those that did have weapons, they've now been processed, and they've been released. And there was a judge out in El Paso that says, nah, you cannot charge them with anything. They're free to go. So this is what we have with the Democrat Party with this administration.
So I want you to see, did you see this? 90% of the illegal immigrants in secret program have been flown to Florida and Texas. And what that is that portal, that website, that app where you fill it out from the country that you're in, and then you get your ticket essentially where to go, and we fly you in and then process you. We have some 347,959 migrants allowed into the secretive program, and they choose Miami and Houston to fly most of them in. 326,000 to Miami alone, 21,000 plus to Houston. Next after that is Los Angeles at 8,000. No doubt why they're targeting those two states.
No, there is no doubt. And you consider the fact that in the last presidential election, you saw with Ron DeSantis, where he won Miami-Dade County. So let's flood some illegals in there. And you know that they want to flip the electoral map here in Texas. And you hear the left talking about they have completely shown their hand. They want illegals to be able to vote in local elections. Well, if they vote in local elections, they're going to vote in state and federal elections. What's to keep that from happening? So, yes, this is part of the plan that the progressive socialists have to add with this open borders, is to give people the right to be able to vote. And it becomes a huge economic issue because now you're asking taxpayers in these respective states to pay for people that are here illegally. And guess what? They just bypassed immigration. Yeah. They just bypassed customs and everything. I can't fly back into this country and bypass customs.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? I want to play one more cut, and then I'm going to play you a celebrity that said the same thing as you that was known to be a far-left winger. Here's Alamard Hamande. He's a U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Texas. He was talking in Houston yesterday about what they found and unwound this drug indictment linked to the Mexican cartels. Cut 31.
A 50-count indictment charging 41 people of drug trafficking in cocaine, heroin, meth, and fentanyl, as well as money laundering. Those charged are alleged to have sourced the drugs from Mexico, smuggled the drugs from Mexico across the border into the Southern District of Texas, into Houston, and into places like Atlanta, Pensacola, New Orleans, Nashville, and Chicago. All charged face life in federal prison, as well as other penalties for other kinds of counts.
So, I mean, that's just a slice of the press conference. I mean, do you see this stuff is all preventable if we had any commitment to the border?
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you think about how that affects the American population, the hundreds of thousands that has lost their lives to the fentanyl poisoning, which is really it's a chemical warfare initiated by China. But then also you have to think about the sex trafficking issue and what is going on. Or think about the 85 to 90,000 children that the Biden administration has lost. Well, where do you think that they are? So they don't really care about either the illegal immigrants. They don't care about the American people. For whatever reason, they just care about their ideological agenda to undermine the sovereignty of the United States of America.
Right. So just about this election in particular, we're getting down to the wire. Everybody believes everything's close. I mean, the president's doing extremely well in Georgia and Arizona compared to the last two elections. He's in dead heat in Wisconsin, up by 6-8 in Michigan. You don't know if that tightens if Israel just finishes off the Hamas terrorists. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. A lot of it has to do with that. But I want you to hear what Michael Rappaport, mm-hmm. He has had enough. He's Jewish. He's in Israel. And he gives this interview. Cut 12.
My political views have changed immensely. I will not vote for Joe Biden. At this point, when we're doing this interview, voting for Trump is on the table. People are like, what are you talking about? That's my reality. I will not support anybody who's anti-Israel. I will not support anybody that is anti-making America safe. That is cool with the fact that I gotta show my ID at least 3 or 4 times at the airport, but it takes you 2 minutes to cross the border. I'm not down with that. I'm not down with police officers in the greatest city on earth getting beaten up.
So he goes on. I just want to give you a slice of that. This is what we're saying. We're not asking people to dig in ideologically. We're just asking you to be pro-American. How is that in our interest to turn on Israel and to not back our cops and to let these illegal immigrants run rampant in our streets? On what planet is that even a question? And he's realizing that.
Well, I think that's just common sense. And when you do the juxtaposition and the comparative analysis, look what happened with the slain police officer up there in New York. Joe Biden comes to New York, and, you know, a fundraiser with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama was more important than going and showing support to that slain New York police officer. Donald Trump goes and visits with the police officer. And that police officer is dead because of the crime policies of the Democrats. I mean, how can you have 19 to 26, you know, convictions and felony offenses and still be out on the streets and, oh, by the way, have a firearm and then you kill a law enforcement officer? But yet, when you listen to Joe Biden, it's legal, law-abiding citizens who want to exercise their Second Amendment right. We're the enemy. We're the ones that are doing wrong. It's the police that are doing wrong. So this is an upside-down world, and Michael Rappaport is among the many that are going to start realizing that between now and November.
I know, and, you know, the president can't call, as I asked President Trump on Thursday. I go, where is President Biden? He goes, you have to call, but he can't. His base won't let him. Because if he calls and shows sympathy towards cops, he loses all those people from Black Lives Matter who are minorities who say cops are the problem. So he just doesn't do anything. He gives a message to the mayor to relay to the Diller family. Not good enough, sir.
Yeah.
Lastly, I'm sure you saw that strike in Syria outside that embassy that took out members of the Quds force. It looks like Soleimani's replacement as it relates to Hezbollah. Here's what David Sanger of The New York Times said. Cut 39.
The Iranians say that this was an embassy property. If it truly was, it's akin to hitting Iranian territory. And that's something the U.S. has been trying to avoid.
An embassy is considered sovereign territory.
Right. Even an embassy, a foreign embassy in the United States is considered usually to be on the property of the foreign country. So the Iranians could make the case that you struck Iranian territory.
But here he went on to say they took out these higher-ups. They don't know how they got to them. They don't know how they unwound them. Cut 42.
So it shakes the Iranians. It makes them begin to look for spies within their midst. So in addition to the actual event, what you're getting is sort of a psychological warfare that we're so plugged into you that we can get at it. And that's, of course, been the key whenever the U.S. and Iran together have gone after an Iranian nuclear facility. And of course, remember, it was President Trump who ordered the killing of the senior commander of the Quds force, General Soleimani, back in 2020.
This is a huge deal. And they took out the brigadier general, two brigadier generals, and five others. These are the ones who are functioning for Iran, using Syria as a pass-through. We allowed that to happen during the Obama years. They never stopped. And then they're arming up the Hezbollah. Yep. And this is what you'd have to do if Israel. They say they will never be wiped out again. They will never be wiped from the face of this earth. They are showing people they mean it. That's why they got to go for the jugular in Hamas in Gaza. And that's why they go for Quds Force. They're at the base of all this.
No, you're absolutely right. Iran is the number one state sponsor of Islamic terrorism. There is no Hamas without Iran. There is no Hezbollah without Iran. There is no Houthi rebels without Iran. And the Quds Force is also a designated terrorist organization. So anyone that is upset that a sovereign nation, Israel, that has been attacked by a proxy military, a terrorist organization, non-state, non-uniform organization of Iran, they need to get over it. So Prime Minister Netanyahu is responsible for the safety and security of his people and of his nation. And when you think about someone like Chuck Schumer and these others, Jamal Bowman, saying that he needs to be replaced, can you imagine if, you know, we had members of our House and Senate that said Winston Churchill needs to be replaced right in the middle of the Battle of Britain back in 1940? That's insane. Well, that's basically what you're saying right now. Or that the President of the United States of America needs to be replaced right after 9/11. Because of our response. So terrorism needs to be defeated. It needs to be destroyed. Hezbollah has the blood of Americans on his hands as well.
Colonel, this would be my message. My message, if I'm President of the United States, is anybody who's complaining about civilian deaths, you blame Hamas. Anybody who worries about going into Rafah, there's one way to stop it. Have Hamas surrender. Show them different times in which they use the Palestinian people, different methods. They're using propaganda to push Israel, stop Israel from finishing the job. And they're not going to stop because their utter existence is at stake. They're trying to divide America from Israel. State their option. Tell them what they're doing. Understand why they're backing them. Behind the scenes, maybe you're going to be looking at some aerial shots and they could be more precise. Maybe we could give them the weapons that would allow that precision to take place. But you keep it below the radar, pun intended. Final thought?
Well, the final thought is, remember just last week you had the United States abstain from the vote at the United Nations. That sent a horrible message. As a matter of fact, the Ayatollah Khamenei even made a comment on that we are creating a chasm between the United States and Israel. Joe Biden is not going to do anything because, you know, politically, he does not want to upset the far-left, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel base of the Democrat Party.
Great talking to you, Colonel. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, when we come back, your turn, 1-866-408-7669. As you know, we just covered five major topics in a very short period of time, and we don't even have talked about what Trump's message is today and what Joe Biden said yesterday about Transgender Transparency Day, what other people called Easter. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks, everybody. And by the way, say hello to Oyster Bunnies. Come on up, Bunnies. Get up here so they can see you. Come on, get in there. Pretty big bunny, huh?
So, Erica Pete, was that Oyster Bunny or Easter Bunny? Did he have something in his mouth? Was he sucking on a sour ball or something?
Maybe it's a new tradition. Instead of Easter eggs, it's Easter oysters.
It's oysters, yeah. I just thought they was something like 400 kids there, and he talked to Al Roker. Everyone's mad at Al Roker for not asking another question. That's what Al Roker does. He's a friendly guy. He's friendly. That's his personality. I have nothing against that. But I would say it's pretty amazing that you're just counting on someone like Al Roker to do an interview because he will not sit down with anybody. Anymore.
It's like going on a late night. This is not a knock on Al Roker. It's like going on the late night shows. You're not going to get the hard-hitting interview.
Right. Even if someone's friendly, it's just crazy. But that's what he was doing yesterday, and then people are going to use that soundbite, and that would be what we learn. Amy, listen on WMX, MXI. Welcome, Amy, from Mississippi.
Hi. Good morning.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that I I'm a witness to exactly what's going on in this country. I was on a flight from Dallas to the Gulf of Mississippi, and a lady sits down beside me, and she speaks no English. And we used an app, of course, to, just talk, which, Southern ladies do, we talk. And come to find out, she said she had just gotten out of, and she called it jail. I'm assuming some kind of holding place. She was in the country illegally. She had on these bracelets. They looked like a hospital bracelet, the plastic hospital bracelets. She did not have to go through any kind of, pat down, nothing. You know, we are, as Americans, we get patted down, we get checked for knives, we get checked like crazy, and she literally walked into the country.
Unbelievable.
We paid for her to be on this airplane, and then she disappears.
Amy, I'm sure. Thank you for that. I appreciate the call. That I'm getting that from a lot of people. Where you see kids walking through with name tags on, probably great kids. We can't raise them. We don't have enough money to raise them. We can't raise everybody's kids, but it's also a trap. Then they go send for their parents, and their parents are here. Listen, in terms of danger, this is how dangerous it is, Amy. Listen to what General Frank McKenzie said on Sunday about ISIS-K after their hit at Russia. Cut 47.
So ISIS-K in particular, but ISIS in general, has a strong desire to attack our homeland. We should believe them when they say that. They're going to try to do it. And I think the threat is growing. It's begun to grow as soon as we left Afghanistan and took pressure off ISIS-K. So I think we should expect further attempts of this nature against the United States as well as our partners and other nations abroad. I think this is inevitable.
More men than women are suicide bombers and terrorists, but women are. And that's an example. How many other people like that on planes we know nothing about? We're showing 2-3 forms of ID. I got to get clear and go to all these tests. And if you want to get TSA passes, you got to set up an appointment. They go through your background check. Days later, you find out if you get it. Other people got to wait on long lines. But if you don't have ID, you don't get on that plane unless you're from another country and we know nothing about you. That's the president you have right now. Please tell that's not happening against Trump. And if that's happening against Trump, he's angrier than you are. That's why these issues, as unorthodox as Donald Trump can be, these are the issues that matter. Are you beating up cops? Are you shooting these cops? Have you broken the border? Do you have any semblance of law and order in our military? What about recruiting goals? Do you have any at all?
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm so proud to be here in Midtown Manhattan. I arrived safely, 48th and 6th. That's where you'll find me. And keep in mind, too, this is the day when Donald Trump does something a traditional campaigner does. He campaigns. He's not going to be in court. He's not going to have to go to a funeral. He's going to go out to Michigan and Wisconsin, two states that he has to win. He's got to go and break that blue wall one more time. We'll see if he can do it. And the current president of the United States has pretty much an open day. This hour, we're going to talk to a commander of the Georgia Legion who's helping out Ukraine fight to push back Russia. And then we'll do a simulcast on Varney and Company. Lee Zeldin standing by. In fact, let's go right to Lee. Lee, it was great talking to you on Friday night with filling in on the Laura Ingraham show. And then talk to you over the weekend about what's going on, because there's so many different areas of what's happening in this country that really are right up your alley. First off, Jonathan Diller, the wake, 2 days awake, four separate sessions, the politicians that thought they could come in and be part of the mourning process, they were not welcome, the governor. The mayor was not welcome. Alvin Bragg got blasted when he showed up. How could they not have anticipated this?
I mean, they really should understand the pain that is out there right now, not just with the NYPD officers, but with the community. And with this family now mourning the loss of their loved one, they are as angry as you can get when not just mourning, but knowing the cause, the reason why we have this situation on the streets of New York City, where morale is as low as it is for the NYPD, where you have elected officials who don't have the back of the NYPD officers, where you have elected officials up in Albany passing new laws to make our streets less safe, prioritizing criminals over law-abiding Americans, law-abiding right. New Yorkers. So I think that they should understand that every single time they try to pop out in one of these settings for their own self-promotion, they're going to start getting slapped back more than ever of people who have been more pissed off than ever.
You know, I went to, as you know, I was at the funeral, and I talked to people and I talked to cops. So on one side of Merrick Road were just everyday people that were supporting cops, a lot of former military, and then the others who are men and women in uniform who have been retired are there. They went about seven deep. It went about a mile and a half. And if you've seen some of the overhead shots around the country, you saw the motorcycles come in, the motorcycle cops come in from around the country, New Mexico, Dallas, Arkansas, Vermont, Toronto was amazing. The flyover, this is a big deal. You kill a cop, it is a big deal. And the people, I would say, and I hope people don't take this wrong, I think anger was actually more prevalent than sadness. Just, and I saw it in Stephanie, the widow. The people are just seething. I never remember anything quite like this, because people see, Democrats and Republicans, this is idiocy. We're doing this to ourselves.
And it happens time and again. There seems to be this continued effort on the part of the left and some in the media who want to make a day, a blank slate for elected officials who might have done wrong in the past, to give them an opportunity to do right today. The problem is that they never do the right thing. So if you're some Democratic, whether you're the governor, you're a state legislator, and you're going to show up and you're going to pay your respects, now, in theory, you'd reflect, decide, okay, what can I do to make things better, to turn this tragedy maybe into something positive in some way? But the problem is that the next day that they go into session, they're not pushing a fix to the pro-criminal laws. And that's why people have given up. They don't want a clean slate today. They want accountability today.
So Cuomo was an idea to roll back bail reform, to put bail reform in, and they wanted to make it seem like only rich people can get out of jail. Rich people aren't knocking off CVSs and be able to get bail, and that's not the unequal part of this. These are criminals who said, I could steal up to $1,000 and you're not going to punish me, or you told the security guards not to pursue me. So now they either close up or lock everything up. So yesterday, Lindy Jones, who is the driver of the Kia, was in court. This guy's had 14 separate arrests, only, I think, two jail stints. This is what he actually said to the Queens District Attorney, Melina Gates, Katz. Listen to what you said. Cut 24.
Yeah, he was quoted in the courtroom. My office quoted him as saying, I shoot people. And that is one of the reasons that we do believe he is an amazing flight risk. Once you're held accountable for one gun charge and now the second gun charge, he's facing up to 30 years. And he made it very clear that this is what he does.
He shoots people. If you're a Queens cop, or if you're a cop, believe me, you understand this in rough areas of Richmond, Virginia, or Chicago, Illinois. That's what they do. They don't have no interest in abiding by the law. That gun was in the glove compartment. The one that shot him, Guy Rivera, had one in his lap, and he was already out on probation.
The craziest thing, as you're playing that clip and your listeners are hearing him saying that he shoots people, in New York, judges don't have discretion to weigh dangerousness when setting bail. New York is the only state in the entire country that doesn't give judges discretion to weigh dangerousness when setting bail. So if you're in front of the judge on a bail-eligible offense and the judge is aware of the dangerousness of that criminal, maybe because he just said inside of the courtroom, I shoot people, the judge has no discretion at all to weigh that when setting bail.
So I want you to hear, Mayor, I want to also show people too. So Governor Hochul, with no persuasive ability at all, did not use any power of her office. She just caved to Carl Hastie, the speaker, who was for defund the cops and we're not going to increase penalties. No proof that bail reform isn't working. So it's the cover of the New York Post today. And I say this even though we're national, because people are listening to this in their city and they understand the frustration. Sadly, it is the same story. Just factor illegal immigrants, many of which are criminals, Factor 70,000 also on top of that. But if you want to know what Mayor Adams is up against, I don't want you to feel bad for him, but I want you to hear it. He's on The Breakfast Show, and Charlamagne Tha God, I've had a chance to meet him, he's a great guy, but this is one of his co-anchors going at it with Adams. Cut 28.
We want to highlight and point out, an officer was killed the other day, which is a rare occurrence. New York police officers have killed at least 7 people this year.
I'm not going to dismiss the loss of a life of an innocent person that wears a uniform to protect
us. But you do.
And I don't want people to all of a sudden criticize that you've been dismissive of a young man being shot and killed.
That's not going to work on me.
I'm not trying to work anything on you. I lost a member of the police department.
You realize that's the attitude amongst those Black Lives Matters mentality? That cops are the problem still?
Yeah, and if, you know, in every occupation there might be somebody. In every occupation there's somebody who's a bad apple. But the fact that you're going to, you know, take nearly 100%, almost 100% of the people who put on that uniform willing to give up their lives to defend that woman, that co-host, that person who's attacking law enforcement, the NYPD officers, if that woman was attacked going back to her car after the show, they would give up their lives to defend her. And there's no understanding or appreciation of that. And listen, I mean, when you are a host on a show like The Breakfast Club, you have to also understand that there are so many people who are listening to you. They're following you. They want to know for guidance, for confirmation on fact, from fiction, how to think. You have to take that awesome power of being a leader, and instead of playing into that, maybe it helps with ratings or a following or it jings up emotion amongst your base. It's your responsibility to be articulating to them, no, you don't understand. Almost 100% of these NYPD officers would give up their lives to protect us.
It would have helped if they brought that up. So do you think anything changes? I mean, Alvin Bragg is going to be trying the president of the United States. He put the CFO of Trump Organization in Rikers Island. We have Letitia James doing the same thing. All the money and resources getting Donald Trump. But we are 6,000 cops down in New York City, like they're down in Chicago, like they're down in Philadelphia. Mostly Florida is up to snuff because they're paying a lot and they're supported. In California, you can't get anybody to be a cop in San Francisco. Los Angeles numbers are down. So this is the issue. So do you think they're sitting around when those windows close and they're together and say, guys, we have to change gears. This country has changed since we started this to fund the cop movement. Now we can't even whisper it unless you're Cori Bush. Do you think there's whispering going on among Democrats? We got to change.
Not really. I mean, they're starting to a bit on the migrant issue. They understand that they have a real problem on their hands come November. But on the crime issue, if you look at what happened in 2022 in a state like New York, which has 3.5 million more Democrats than Republicans, it's 22% Republican. I got just under 50% of the vote. We got more votes than any Republican statewide in 52 years. There were 11 House Republicans who were elected in November of 22, 6 Republican freshmen in districts that Joe Biden had won in 2020. The number one issue was crime. They didn't come out of that election all with some epiphany saying, hey, this is going to happen to us again in 2024. We have to focus on this issue. We have to address it. There might be some people inside of the Democratic Party who had the light bulb go off, who had the epiphany go off. But the problem is that whether it's Carl Hastie, who's the Speaker of the Assembly in New York, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who's the Senate Majority Leader in the State Senate here in New York, they have a power base from New York City. These are Democrats who believe that they have not gone far enough in passing more pro-criminal laws. So if you want to know what's happening behind closed doors, whether it's right after the election in 2022, it's in the middle of a cycle, or it's right now with November just around the corner, what's happening behind closed doors is a strong belief amongst their party and their elected officials that they have not gone far enough in passing pro-criminal laws.
That's insane. Lastly, when's the last time you were in Israel?
I was there actually in September, just before the attacks of October 7th. I was there just a few weeks beforehand. I had my wife and my daughters with me, and oh my gosh, who would have thought just right after we would have left, that things would have turned south as quickly as it did. And every single day I think about what they're going through. And we have a lot of New Yorkers who they're there. They have families there. We have a New Yorker, as you know, from Long Island, who's currently being held hostage still by Hamas. So, you know, for us, it's as personal as it gets here, even though that's thousands of miles away.
So the president seems to be wavering. I watched Senator Van Hollen over the weekend in Maryland say urging. I watched Ro Khanna urging the president to pull back on weapon systems. Even President Trump was not supportive. They said they should get it done quickly. They're losing world support. Lee, to me, you turn this around and say if there's a problem, you blame Hamas. If you don't want a Rafah invasion, tell Hamas to surrender. We did lose seven I guess workers who were delivering food, aid workers who were delivering food, which is sad. The Israelis have owned up to it. I guess it was a mistake. So your reaction to what's happening now, the fracturing of the U.S.-Israeli relationship?
Israel has no choice but to eliminate Hamas. No choice. Post-October 7th, now you could put all the pressure in the world on Israel to say that they support a ceasefire. Let's just say Israel an hour from now says, okay, we support a ceasefire. There's not going to be a ceasefire because Hamas doesn't accept a ceasefire. They never have. They never will. They operate off of the mentality. At no point post-October 7th has Hamas operated with the mentality that they are going to just lay down arms, that their jihad is over. You know, they might strategically be okay with a few day pause so that they can reposition their forces to gain an offensive position. But for Israel, they don't have the choice to just wake up tomorrow and decide that they're going to accept a ceasefire. Now, here at home, the reason why the positions have changed within Joe Biden and the Democratic Party and Schumer, it's not based on merit. It's based off of politics, domestic politics, and trying to win an election.
But Schumer's Jewish. So you think he cares more about the Democratic Party than he does his faith?
Chuck Schumer cares more about Chuck Schumer than he cares about the Democratic Party or anything else. He says that he's made a lifelong pledge to be a friend of Israel, and I call BS on it. He has made a lifelong pledge to be loyal to Chuck Schumer. And in this case, he's the majority leader. He wants to stay the majority leader, and he has an issue on his hands. There's a Senate race going on in Michigan. He sees what's going on with that uncommitted vote in the Democratic presidential primary. They're making calculations to help their own pursuit of power, and that is causing them to change positions on an issue as important as this. But that's why they're doing it. It is for domestic politics to try to win elections in November. It's not based on merit.
And Congressman Zeldin, last one. Are you being vetted on some way of joining President Trump should he win as a vice president, about a running mate or a cabinet member?
My only thought, comment on that is that I am continuing to do everything in my power to make sure that he wins, to help grow the Republican Party in November. You have to win the election in order for any of those hypotheticals to play out post-November. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are starting to think about the next administration and who's going to be in what position, and they need to channel all of that energy towards actually getting out the vote and winning this November, or they're just wasting their time.
Congressman Lee Zeldin, always great. Thanks so much, Lee.
You got to take care.
And by the way, he was extremely welcomed at the wake and at the funeral. When we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's Biden versus Trump.
Yes,
we know that.
It is.
What do you say to voters who are upset that those are the two choices?
Get over yourself. Those are the two choices.
Yeah, love that.
Right? And you know, it's kind of like one is old and effective and compassionate, has a heart and really cares about people. And one is old and has been charged with 91 felonies.
Interesting.
I don't understand why this is even a hard choice.
It's a really hard choice, not for any clear-thinking person, because Joe Biden, now they want to admit he's old. That's a new tactic. Number two, she was on with Jimmy Fallon. That was Hillary Clinton, and everyone cheers. She's in a home game there, but you're not going to get a whole. You're not going to get any different response in New York City, not at all. Unless, of course, you talk to a New Yorker named Michael Rappaport. Cut 12.
My political views have changed immensely. I will not vote for Joe Biden at this point when we're doing this interview. Voting for Trump is on the table. People are like, what are you talking about? That's my reality. I will not support anybody who's anti-Israel. I will not support anybody that is anti-making America safe, that is cool with the fact that I got to show my ID at least three or four times at the airport, but it takes you 2 minutes to cross the border. I'm not down with that. I'm not down with police officers in the greatest city on earth getting beaten up.
And he told that in Israel to Vice Grad 24, that's a pro-Western news aggregator. So we sat down and talked to him. You know Michael Rappaport. He's been in a bunch of movies. He really does not try to lose the New York accent. You always see him kind of screwing around with Howard Stern. He was kind of out there, big NBA guy, got in a battle with Kevin Durant for a while. But I was just shocked. I wanted to share that with you. How many other people feel the same way, but are not going to sit in front of the camera and say that? Does Jerry Seinfeld feel the same way? We know that he's been flat out pro-Israel, and he just visited Israel, too. How many other people are going to stand up like Michael Rappaport?
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we're back. We're waiting. We're going to go on the ground, we hope, to Ukraine, where an active war is going on, as everybody knows. And we're going to do the best we can because it's going to be worth it. We're going to speak to a man called, and if not today, it's going to be this week, Mamukha Mamulashvili. He's a commander of the Georgia Legion, created in 2014 to help defend Ukraine freedom, performing special operations in Ukraine. Ukrainians sent a lot of their fighters to help out in Georgia when the Russians invaded. Just for your notes, the Russians said they were going into Georgia, and then they were told just to settle things down because they had some Russian people that felt they were threatened, so they wanted to protect them. No one believed that. There was a problem they had with Shashka Feely, who was leading Georgia at the time. They never left. They said they were going to leave. They never left. They went to Moldova. They said there were some Russian sympathizers there who felt under threat. They basically have a presence there. They never left. In Ukraine, they went into the Donbas region, took Crimea. They said they're going to take Crimea, but Donbas was because they thought it was an area in which Russian sympathizers were there, and they felt oppressed. So they provided some security for them. They said they were going to leave. They never left. That's what the Russians do. They did the whole thing after World War II. We left. They didn't. That was the whole dropping of the Iron Curtain, mentioned by Winston Churchill. Nobody argued because that's exactly what happened. We're seeing the Constitute again, and that's why it's so maddening that so many Republican side like J.D. Vance and others, who I agree with on most things, just says, no, we can't put any money into that. RFK Jr., we can't put any money into that. Donald Trump now says, okay, let's make it loans. All right, fine. Whatever. Get him the equipment. The Russians want to take it, and they're going to move through. You know they're going to move through. They're going to take the natural resources of the countries they absorb. They're going to forcibly conscript their people, and they're going to make their army bigger. They're going to learn from their past mistakes, and they're going to grow. 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we're going to have this problem. We can stop it now, but for some reason we're not. Number two, for those people who say, I wish we had a Ronald Reagan around. Reagan was so strong. You know, we had strong defense. People were afraid to mess with us. Yeah, there was Beirut, and we did leave. But they weren't shooting at us when we left. We just thought that's too dangerous. You know, those were the days. Ronald Reagan would not have given Ukraine what they needed to be successful. Not like Joe Biden's doing. Ronald Reagan would have done it. Read anything that he has written, from his letters to his books to the biographies on him by Lou Cannon. You read about him. He understood the Russian threat. It never changed just because they went from the Soviet Union to Russia. So that's why I find just astounding about this generation of Republicans, many of them. Oh, let's just not worry about it. We keep trying not worrying about it, and it never works. What I think is pretty amazing, too, and I'll go back to this, is what took place yesterday, and I can't minimize this. You know Soleimani was a big deal. Well, The Israeli intelligence was so great, we were able to spot Al-Quds commanders coming out of a building in Damascus, Syria, and were able to take them out with precision while sparing the Syrians who were standing right in the same vicinity. Not we, the Israelis were. If you are fighting for your survival, you have no choice. This is what you do. Hezbollah has been shelling. You have to go 200 miles off your, or you have to send 200,000 people off the northern part of your country. That is total disruption. That cannot stand in a country this small. So therefore, you have to strike back. Matthew Continente last night was on Special Report and talked about how this administration, all they want to do is not make sure things don't get out of control. And they're failing in Ukraine, and they're failing in Israel. Cut 43.
For the administration not wanting this to escalate, the only response is to say, too late. This has been going on for months now, Brett. It began with the Houthis in Yemen, who were just firing missiles and disrupting shipping across the region. It has to do with the Iranian proxies in Iraq, firing on American troops, firing drones in Israel just the other day. And now there's this new front, not only in Lebanon, where Hezbollah has been engaged in low-intensity conflict with Israel, but also in Israel, also in Syria, rather, where Iran is offloading the weapons that they give to Hezbollah in Lebanon. This is a regional conflict, and it demands a regional policy, which the administration does not have.
They have no policy. Now we understand that they're meeting with the Saudis in order to get the Saudis to recognize Israel. So in other words, you're trying to do the Abraham Accords. That's where they left off when the administration shifted. You don't even bring up Abraham Accords. That's what happened with Sudan, Bahrain, UAE. That's what happened. They recognized Israel's right to exist. And Iran panicked. So they pushed Hamas to do what they did. It is so clear. Hezbollah, supplied by Iran, pushed them to do what they did. We'll have a southern war, a northern war. The Palestinians will be treated brutally, and therefore we'll get everybody back in our corner. The Saudis have laid out. I think eventually they're going to recognize Israel because it's in Saudi Arabia's best interest as MBS slowly tries to modernize that country. And people say, well, look, Jake Sullivan's meeting with MBS. Okay, fine. Number one, that was a deal that could have been done when you went in. But your president went out and said they're an outlaw nation that should be isolated. And then told the Houthi rebels, you're no longer on the terror list. So therefore, we can normalize trade relations with Yemen. Why shouldn't we? Guess what? All blew up in your face, along with trying to deal with Iran, who laughed in your face, demanded millions of dollars to get our hostages back, while allowing for a period of time our troops to be shelled in Iraq. So just understand, when you people talk about Trump, he's a businessman, he's too so transactional. These 4 years would have presented challenges for any president. But if you look to see how this president, the former president, would have acted as opposed to this one, he never would have normalized trade relations with Iran. He never would have allowed them to start selling oil to China. He would never have allowed Venezuela to put their dirty oil on the market. He never would have lifted sanctions on that country. They never would have flooded our border with their citizens and emptied their prisons with their prisoners at our border. That wouldn't have happened. You might not have liked his language, the way he talked about NATO, but to me, he never would have left. And to me, they would have been paying more. I love the fact that Norway and Sweden have joined. I think it's great. But David Sanger talked about the importance of that hit. Cut 41.
The Iranians have to wonder, how did they know that so many commanders from the Quds Force, the elite group of the Iranian military, were gathered in one place? There is either a human spy or there was some kind of intercept, but it was remarkable intelligence that they could kill seven of these commanders.
Hey, Eric, how important was that hit? I mean, if you think about it, the Soleimani was important. There's no question about it. Taking out al-Baghdadi was extremely important. But having the Iranians do what they did in that area, what does that tell you about their intelligence?
About Israel's intelligence? I mean, they are the most targeted country on the face of the planet a lot of the time. And therefore, they need the, you know, one of the best intelligence agencies on the face of the planet. So it tells me that they know a lot more than they let on a lot of the time.
They were assassinating scientists on motorcycles.
In Iran.
In Iran.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, do you notice Iran's pattern? Now, we'll see if I'm wrong now. But when you hit Iran, they don't like that. They like when you show weakness, that's when they look tough. That's when they start shelling troops. That's when they start getting aggressive. They don't like when they're hit and they're taken out. And I think they're probably freaked out right now. Oh, there's going to be a response. Good luck with that. You already have Hamas bombing. You're already fighting head to head with them. Hezbollah is already doing their thing. Every time they do it, they get hit to the third power, hit back. So this is their opportunity. I think Netanyahu and others are saying this is an opportunity to get rid of the infection in the region.
And I think Iran is also now thinking even more about spies, because how did they know he was there?
Right.
You know, they're getting that intel somehow. So Iran's going to be doing a lot of house cleaning.
Yeah. For a while, I think they said this has worked even better than we thought. But right now, if you look at some of these reports from Israel, they're getting hundreds of Hamas fighters as they empty out these hospitals full of these terrorists, and they're getting closer and closer to going into Rafah. Yesterday, there's a FaceTime about how they were going to go into Rafah, providing a corridor, in theory, for the innocent Palestinians. The U.S. doesn't want them to do that. They have to do it. They have to do it. So that's going to be interesting. So I'm looking forward to seeing if there's going to be any politician out there that can just sit there and say, look, I don't like any innocent people dying, but understand why it's happening. Understand that West Point War College president came out and said nobody could have done better than Israel has done in Gaza in terms of preventing civilian deaths. They say there's 30,000 plus civilians have died since this operation started late October, more like 12,000 deaths. We do not know how many of them are Hamas fighters because they don't give us precise numbers. So this is what you say as a leader. Hamas is responsible that there's war in Gaza. And if you don't want to see an invasion in Rafah, call for a mass surrender along with the hostages. Either that or they're coming in with force and they're going to go get them themselves and wipe you out in the process. Because Egypt has sealed their border. There is nowhere for them to go. You do the same thing if your life was threatened and their nation is.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, just a quick announcement as we wait for Stuart Varney to come back from commercial. Then at the back end, I'll be able to take some calls. Remember, April 27th, they're going to be in Henderson, Nevada. I hope everyone could be there right outside Las Vegas. Plan your vacation around it. It's going to be history, liberty, and laughs. BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. VIP opportunities where I talk to you before the show. I got two great guys from Patrick O'Rourke and Rick Thatcher that helped me out. They're fantastic at their job. Pat's a great stand-up. Rick is the MC. But we reenact great moments in our history in the fun, exciting way. If you're patriotic, you'll love it. So let's listen in.
Almost here on the East Coast, and Brian Kilmeade joins us now. Brian, the New York Times getting a lot of criticism for what some consider its disgraceful coverage of Officer Diller's funeral on Long Island. They didn't cover his widow's speech during the service. It seems, Brian, looking back on it, that this is a real political turning point in New York as far as crime is concerned. Do you see it that way?
I do see it that way. And I was there, and the overhead shots are just awe-inspiring around the world. If you see them, I don't know if you have them to queue them up, but they show tens of thousands of police officers, as well as everyday citizens and veterans, people of Massapequa, Long Island, where Donald Trump was the day before. And they showed up to mourn someone most of them had never met, 31-year-old Jonathan Diller. And New York Times put it on A21, at which time they took the part of the speech from Stephanie, the widow, that just talked about what a great guy Jonathan was. We know that. But you know what also was in that speech? The speech was, this doesn't have to happen. You're responsible for this. You don't back the cops. That's why my son doesn't have a father. That's why I don't have a husband. And that's why his parents no longer have a son. They've left all of that out because she opened up fire, like the other widows she was talking to, about the criminal first attitude here in New York City. And if you pick up the New York Post today, Carl Hastie, the left-wing speaker Speaker of the House, pushing back against getting rid of bail reform, saying, since when do stiff penalties deter crime? Hey, you idiot. If you put them in jail, they can't commit crime.
Yeah. It's not a question of harsh penalties. It's a question of putting them in jail when they've done something wrong, you know, and not letting them out on the day after they've done something
wrong. Did you see what happened yesterday, Stuart? They had one of the guys, the driver, in the courtroom to be arraigned. The other guy's recovering, sadly, from the shot, the bullet he got in the back. And this guy told the DA, Queens DA, that's what I do. I shoot people, when asked why he had a gun in the glove compartment. So there's no remorse. He doesn't feel bad. This is what they do. They belong in prison or in the electric chair. And instead, they're out amongst us trying to create havoc. And when a cop steps up to do his job, they take their shot. Since when is that okay?
Absolutely. Since when is this okay? I want you to listen to how the White House responded when asked about the release of those migrants involved in the riot at the border last month. Roll it.
Most of the border crossers accused of beating up Texas National Guardsmen in a riot last month were released on their own recognizance Sunday. How does that make people in this country any safer?
So I have to refer you to Department of Justice and DHS on that particular reporting. Look, there is a challenge at the border, right? Our immigration system has been broken for decades, before this president became president. Because of the last president and because they put politics ahead of the American people, we are seeing chaos.
The border was broken when Biden took office, in my personal opinion. Not 10 years ago, but 3 years ago. What say you?
I mean, it's just laughable to think that you think that Donald Trump, by doing the Remain in Mexico and put in the third country, the first country you come into, you have to apply for citizenship, to say, I'm taking away all your aid, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Mexico, you're getting tariffs, unless you force your border. If you guys keep sending your people here, you're not going to get anything from us. And we're going to follow every dollar to make sure it goes to programs, not to politicians' pockets. Since when does that not work to put 20,000 on Mexico's southern border? That's not politics. That's taking a patchwork system and trying to make it work, and then trying desperately to build a wall despite the nonstop court cases that the Democrats kept putting in front of President Trump to make him not build a wall, who everybody admits works. It's not foolproof. It defers. It delays. It stops. It funnels. We need that fixed. And I think America laughs at those type of excuses. There's no question about it. And we all know that the Mayorkas was bragging about the dozens of executive orders at the border that he took great pride in unwinding of Donald Trump's. Remember that. We got the tape, and now we see the results.
Something's got to give, Brian, and that's a fact. Thanks for being on the show. See you again real soon.
Go get him, Stuart.
California Congressman.
So that was Stuart Varney. We're on FBN, one of the fastest growing networks in all the land. It does beat CNBC almost every single hour. But I'll continue with the border talk in the 1 or 2 minutes that I have left. And what they're referring to, and what Stuart first was referring to, is, do you guys remember a week and a half ago when the Texas National Guard was ahead of the Border Patrol with a wire fence? And these guys did not want to wait. They said, you're not going to come through. We're going to check you out. And we'll find out how to handle it, but you're not moving. They didn't want to wait. So they actually went through the razor wire and then overpowered the National Guard, who I guess were told you they can't use their guns. But people have told me, even though it doesn't look it, that they were, in fact, armed. They got through. They ran over. They kicked. They stomped our guys in uniform. And now after a week, we put 200 in jail, and a judge on Easter didn't like the paperwork the DA had put in front of them and said, I'm going to release them all on their own recognizance. We understand it, and I'm going to make sure on their own recognizance, the state has since picked them up and put them in jail. Can you imagine? If images tell the story, can you imagine if I'm sitting there in El Salvador in my hut, wondering if this is the time to come to America, and I find out not only can I come, I could beat up National Guards members and still get myself into the country. I'm in. And since when do all these military age males need a way out of their country? They need a way out of their country because this is an opportunity put forward by this administration. Everybody knows it was better under Trump. Everyone knows it's his number one issue. Robert F. Kennedy said today on our set, I never believed Trump. I thought Trump was too harsh on the border. And then I went to the border and I realized he was right. How many other people watching right now that you know in your life that said Trump is too harsh on the border? And now we see these images, or you've been there yourself and you say Trump was right. That's why he wants to be president again.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country and world. This is the Center for Illegal Immigration. Sorry, El Paso. Sorry, Tucson. I really think we're in the middle of it. We have tens of thousands sitting here now with debit cards. We're doing this experimental program where instead of giving them food, we give them money. How could that go wrong? Joey DeVito is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour, comedian, staff writer for Gutfeld. Michael Goodwin standing by from the New York Post. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Yeah, he was quoted in the courtroom. My office quoted him as saying, I shoot people. And that is one of the reasons that we do believe he is an amazing flight risk. And he made it very clear that this is what he does. He shoots people.
Yeah, the Queen's DA talking about Lindy Jones. I shoot people. The words of the driver of the Kia Jonathan Diller walked up on and was shot from. 200 cops packed a courtroom to see him indicted yesterday is part of a bigger problem of lawlessness and fearlessness among criminals that they can commit any crime and not pay any price. We discuss the outrage.
Number two.
This clears the way for the court to finally look at what many of us view as an obscene judgment. I mean, this number was pulled out of nowhere. When you drill down on the order, there's really nothing there.
That is Jonathan Turley, Trump Trials. DJT puts up his $175 million bond, but gets a massive gag order for this New York criminal trial. We're going to look at the issues that has Trump's ire.
Number one.
It's horrifying. Our numbers among younger voters, particularly black, younger blacks, they think that our politics is just a bunch of bull.
James Carville, 2024, Trump back on campaign trail today. Michigan, Wisconsin, states he must have. He currently leads by 6 to 8 points in Michigan. Dead heat in Wisconsin. Dems begin to panic on their withering support, as you just heard, among young people. But does a Florida 6-week abortion ban on the ballot put that state in play? Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist, joins us. Michael, I'll ask you something about Florida. So many New Yorkers are there. Were you surprised, number one, that DeSantis went for the 6 weeks? Now that it's upheld, they've agreed to put it on the ballot. That mobilizes outside forces and outside money in Florida.
It certainly does, and particularly for the Senate race, which could determine the control of the chamber. Rick Scott is about even with his Democratic opponent, and I'm sure that's the kind of topic that will enliven that race, and the Democrats are already pouring a lot of money into that race. So that could be an immediate impact, and that's the kind of thing that can happen across the country. It's not, of course, it's the presidential race, but it's in certain states with certain races,
yeah.
Certain, a Republican incumbent or a Democrat maybe who is in danger, and suddenly this issue comes along, and it's a life raft for a Democrat who wants much wider freedom for abortions. So yes, it can have a unintended consequences in a lot of states.
So a couple of things. You see that massive gag order put on President Trump in New York in the Alvin Bragg case?
Yes.
So the reason was they didn't want him talking about the judge's daughter, and they didn't want him talking about the prosecutor. But why would he not? If you look at Matt Colangelo is straight out of Joe Biden's Justice Department. He left his job to take over this case. Now he's actually leading the case. And then you have a judge with a daughter who's a Democratic activist who is leading a charge for Kamala Harris. So why is that not not an issue that the president should bring up in this case?
I think he should. And I think the question is, can he do it publicly, meaning from himself, or does it have to come through his lawyers? at the very least, Brian, this is another example of how all of these cases have something fundamentally so wrong about them that it does give the appearance of a political prosecution. And that is cutting to the bone on every one of these cases. I mean, you go back to the documents case. Okay, Donald Trump withheld classified documents, but so did Joe Biden. But he's not being prosecuted. So did Hillary Clinton. She wasn't prosecuted. You look at the Georgia case, I mean, where you have the meeting with the White House and then all of the dirty deeds of the prosecutor and her lover. On and on and on it goes. And Alvin Bragg, as you have noted, the previous DA turned this case down. Bragg initially turned it down himself, was perhaps pushed by the White House. I mean, let's see all of those emails. But I think that, and you mentioned the daughter of the judge, that she works for Adam Schiff, has been paid millions of dollars, I believe, by Adam Schiff over the years. Adam Schiff is one of the great Trump tormentors, the lead arsonist on the first impeachment case. Remember how he totally misquoted the transcript of the Ukraine phone call to make it seem like a mafia job? I mean, so is the country so small that that all these things are just coincidences, or is this really what's happening? Is what we see, is this the evidence of that the White House is pulling all of these strings? I mean, it seems to me this is a reasonable grounds for appeal, and even before the trial begins, and it seems a reasonable political point for Donald Trump to make.
So listen to this. So people act like, oh, you're going after the judge's daughter, like she's some 9-year-old in third grade. She is she is a adult working for Kamala Harris. Merchant's daughter has worked as president of Authentic Campaigns, a firm Vice President Kamala Harris uses for digital advertising. Another post accused the daughter of using a picture of Trump behind bars as her profile picture on the X account. But they say Al Baker, a spokesperson for the State Office of Court Admissions, said it was not actually hers. She had given up the site and somebody else took it and recreated that. Excuse me? Number one, dude, are you a little bit suspicious about somebody who has him in jail while working for Kamala Harris, but she left a website and somebody else just jumped on it? You didn't collapse it and take it with you? Why would you ever allow that? The Michael Goodwin page. Michael, if you decide you're getting bored with your name and your beliefs, just leave it open. I'll just fill it up with whatever I want.
That's not how it works, is it?
I don't think so.
Right.
So I'm just
And Brian, these are all fundamental questions of fairness. And if you are going to prosecute and make history by the first prosecution of an ex-president, particularly when he is running for re-election, and is the nominee of the opposition party, don't you want your hands to be completely clean? I mean, if you love this country, if you treasure the principles on which it was founded and on which it remains based, wouldn't you want everything to be clean, above board, above reproach? I mean, wouldn't you want to be Caesar's wife in taking care not to suggest any conflicts, not to suggest that there is a political angle? And if the answer is yes, then all of these cases have to be reexamined in that light. But so far, what is remarkable is the Democrats have not yielded an inch on any case. They still continue to act as if all of this is clean and above board and normal. But it's not.
He made the bond, so that'll put that case aside. Letitia James will have to have something else to do, some other case where you kick her shoes off and just sit back. Maybe she'll actually go for criminal soon, or maybe the CFO of the Trump organization again.
Thing.
So Robert Kennedy was on Fox and Friends today and kind of surprised us with his comment. Do you know the whole threat against Donald Trump and Joe Biden says he's a threat to democracy. He's going to be a dictator. Robert F. Kennedy says he sees a threat and it is not Trump. Listen to this. Cut 9.
President Trump said about, you know, about questioning the election and you know, in, to the extent that he engaged in an effort to overthrow that, of course, that's a threat to democracy, but it is not the worst threat, undermining the First Amendment of our Constitution and then weaponizing the federal agencies to get his opponents off the ballot. You know, and in my case, I just say particularly denying me Secret Service protection. That's never happened in history.
So he went on to say that he got his whole he got his social media account banned in 2020 because he came out and he questioned the vaccine. He said that you deny me Secret Service protection, even though his dad was assassinated. By the way, he was right there at the time. And he said he looks at Joe Biden as a bigger threat when he found out the other people that he not only stopped him from putting out what we now is correct information on the vaccine and also the where this whole thing emanated. He stopped other people from doing it. He said that's the threat to democracy.
Look, I think he makes a very good point because it is the First Amendment. And it is the First Amendment for a reason that is fundamental to our constitutional separation of powers. And, you know, Brian, it strikes me, of course, that the Democrats, they did this starting, you know, with using the big tech. I mean, the holy, unholy alliance between the FBI and the big tech companies during the 2020 campaign, the censoring of the New York Post and all of that. You know, it strikes me that in the court case, it came before the Supreme Court recently, the justice that Joe Biden nominated, Justice Jackson, she said in objecting to the line of argument for the, I believe it's Missouri, bringing this case about the censoring, she said that what you're proposing would hamstring the federal government. And lawyers across the country, I think their heads exploded. That is the whole purpose of the First Amendment, is to hamstring the government, to give the rights to people, not to the government. You have a Supreme Court justice who doesn't understand this. Of course, she's a Supreme Court justice from the left. And that is one of the big divides in this country today, is that the left does not really respect the Constitution when it gives rights to people they don't agree with or don't like. And we saw that Kennedy is right. That was true of the vaccine issue. It was true of the Hunter Biden laptop issue. It is true of many, many other things, that if the Democrats don't want to hear it, if they don't want it said, if they think it's a threat to their power, they will shut it down. I mean, that is a great and I would agree with him. It's probably a greater threat than what Trump actually represents, because even if he succeeded, I mean, that was never going to succeed. I mean, that whole January 6th stuff was doomed to failure from the beginning. But this is an ongoing issue that I think Kennedy is right about.
Can I shift over to crime and punishment? I was just seeing this headline. A judge says the FDNY firefighters booing Letitia James, yelling pro-Trump chants reveals systematic problem with her. But I want to talk about what happened over the weekend. Michael Goodwin, sadly, you've reported on a lot of deaths of police officers, way too many through your days in New York, from the Times to where you're at now with the New York Post. Have you ever seen a turnout like that we saw in Massapequa?
No, that was really extraordinary, and thank you, Brian, for bringing attention to it, and thank you for some of the great reporting you
Thanks.
Did about what was going on behind the scenes with the politicians and the family. Look, we're in an extraordinary moment in New York, and the Post today reports on Carl Heastie, the Speaker of the State Assembly, who really, when a speaker with that kind of majority denies a piece of legislation, it's not going to pass. And he is saying that increasing sentences and locking up more people in terms of retail theft won't help. Well, of course it will help. It will keep those people off the street. But this is the mentality, and that's why the cop shooter was on the street. That's the very reason by with both him and the driver who says, I shoot people. This is why they're on the street, because of people like Carl Heastie in Albany, yep, who do not believe that the prison situation has anything to do with the crime element. I'm not sure what his alternative answer is to crime. Why does he think crime occurs? Is it not about somebody getting something for nothing, and in most cases, and therefore they have to pay a price, and that price is to lose their freedom temporarily? Isn't that the whole point of crime and punishment? And has there ever existed a society where there were no consequences for crime? Because that's where we seem to be heading here, that you do the crime, you don't do the time.
And that's what I found for the people. They were angry, so angry that this happened. This is so preventable. You know, once in a while, you know, your car fails, you lose your brakes, and people die, and it's always tragic. But when you think everything is so preventable, when it doesn't have to happen, when you see a pattern, and when you're a widow and you stare at six other widows who went through the same exact thing as you for the same ridiculous lack of law enforcement, it just becomes overwhelming. And that's what I felt on the streets.
When Stephanie Diller, the widow, talked about the events of 2.5 years ago, and that was the St. Patrick's funeral for one of the two officers killed early on in 2022, and in a domestic violence call. And when she said the demands for change were made and change never came, I mean, that is so stark that we know what the problem is, and we don't do anything about it. That's what really, really infuriates people.
Rhea's column in the New York Post. It's also syndicated. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
You got it. Joe DeVito at the bottom of the hour. You're next. Your calls.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
But this weekend, there was one story that was so disturbing, so dark, even the news couldn't handle it.
In our editorial discussions this morning, we were asked not to show the image from this video because of its violent and disturbing nature.
Video, which we are intentionally choosing not to show you.
We're not going to show because of how disturbing it is.
I didn't get to see it at all. This has got to be devastating. News channels show images from Ukraine, from Gaza, from natural disasters. They get through them dispassionately. I can't imagine how devastating this footage must be.
Former President Donald Trump shared a video, this one, on his Truth Social account featuring an image of President Joe Biden hogtied on the back of a pickup truck.
That's what was so disturbing and dehumanizing. You wouldn't show it on television, and an airbrushed Biden decal on the back of a truck? Aren't you the same networks that show reruns of 9/11 every year?
It's so, I mean, it shocked me to see, this is the one day he hosts on Monday. We'll play more of it tomorrow. But it just shocked me to see his take on it. I mean, he's even taken it lighter than I took it. But that's typical. They try to get something on Trump and make it the worst thing ever. And even Jon Stewart couldn't stomach it. Joe DeVito next.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I mean, I don't think it's great that Trump is posting things like this, but it's not like people really think Joe Biden was tied up in the back of the truck.
It's a doctored image, but it's plastered on the tailgate of the pickup truck. So if you're driving behind it, it would appear as if Joe Biden were actually restrained on the vehicle's flatbed.
If you think that's really Joe Biden tied up on the back of the pickup truck, I don't know that you have the mental acuity to be operating a motor vehicle.
So Jon Stewart surprised me. I watch The Daily Show on Mondays because he is unbelievably bright, and he's way left, but he does point out sometimes how ridiculous the left is to a lesser extent than Bill Maher. But I always intelligently, I think, Joe DeVito's with me now, one of Kupfel's key writers. Also, you see him all over the channel. Extremely successful stand-up before, during, and after Gutfeld, should there ever be a time. Joe, I just want to get your take on, because I watch on Monday nights. I don't really watch The Daily Show. What's your thought? Does that surprise you that he talked about the disproportionate reaction to Joe Biden on the decal of a pickup?
He's making sense. That's what Jon Stewart will do every now and then. That, you know what I think it is? I think they're just angrier that they see someone driving a pickup truck.
that's by the way, how can you know what they were doing? They were going by Kathy Griffin, was at the Paramount. Have you been to the Paramount?
Yes, that's a wonderful venue.
Yeah. So she was at the Paramount. So the Trump train went past there because you know what she did to Trump. She hates Trump and mocked him and made believe they chopped off his head or something. So they were doing that. And one of the cars had that on the back.
So it's you could not ask for a better contrast. That here is something clearly a joke about the president on the back of a truck. And there was a woman who held up a bloody head representing Donald Trump. So which one is the joke that you can't tolerate?
Handle.
Which is the one that – and then the overreaction from people at MSNBC reminds me of a headline I saw where it said anti-Semitism at an all-time high in Germany. And I thought, really? There wasn't another time in Germany where anti-Semitism was a little bit higher.
Right.
So it's incredible that – look, I know we all have our biases and obviously we're here because we have a certain point of view.
Like you don't like Italians. Which is weird because you're Italian.
Very, very anti. Only specific members of my family, but in general.
Okay. My fault. I got bad information.
But it's insane that they really are living in a different reality. It's not even variations of watching the same movie. They're looking at that as unpardonable crime that someone put up this thing of Joe Biden being hogtied. I mean, come on.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, do you watch the other channels to get ready for this one? Do you ever see – okay, let me – like once a week, do you look and see what Jimmy Fallon's doing, Jimmy Kimmel's doing?
No. I just don't have the time. I imagine there could be some benefit to it, but I'll stay in my own little echo chamber. And I feel like if you're a conservative or a moderate, you don't need to watch those shows because their message is going to get to you whether you like it or not. Those people can live a life where they don't see anything that's happening on Fox News or conservative media. We don't have that luxury.
All right. A couple of things that are going on right now that I think are comically stupid. Number one, we have raised the minimum wage for fast food workers in California to $20 an hour. Mm. They can't possibly see how that could get to the consumer. I don't know, the prices of everything, the amount of employees that you hire, and do you really go to Hardee's for a career? You know what you're getting when you enter.
Yeah.
Didn't you have two jobs when you first started, when you first broke into the workplace?
They weren't luxury jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was 16 slicing cold cuts in a deli, I didn't think, how will I support my family on this? That those are jobs for teenagers, people who are back in the workforce, maybe some elderly people, and people who don't speak English. It's a way to get into the workforce and then move on to something else. You don't retire from that.
All right, so menu increases have now gone. McDonald's has upped their prices 100%. Popeye's 86%. Taco Bell 81%. Chipotle 75%. Jimmy John 62%. Panera 54%. Now, what I find interesting is Gavin Newsom's got a friend who runs Panera Bread, and he's a big-time donor. And do you know what he does?
They got the bake your bread exemption.
Which means?
Which means that if you're a food outlet like that that bakes your own bread, you're exempt from this minimum.
Exactly.
This is a new thing. The baked good exemptions, the yeast loophole where
right.
I don't know. And I guess I don't know if it affects Subway. Subway claims that they bake their own bread. It's
right. 80%. Now all of a sudden, no, I don't bake my own bread. I get it from King Cullen.
And it's just strange. It's so corrupt. It's so corrupt and so bizarre that you would even think of, well, if you bake your own bread, you get out of this minimum wage race.
Because my life's so empty and so few people text me, I was actually watching the State of the State address with Gavin Newsom. He had a press conference after, and they asked him, why are you doing this? You know right now that we're in a $36 million deficit. Why are you doing this now? He goes, oh, it's a trigger. I have to do it. And then I looked up. It's a trigger because you put this in as a trigger. I had to pull the trigger. Yeah. My fingers were there pulling back already.
The way they're able to distance themselves from the outcome of their policies that They always seem so shocked, so stunned, like, well, now you have to cut back on the number of employees you have? Yes. Yes, because fast food's supposed to be quick and cheap.
I don't want to pick up. I appreciate. I used to work in a restaurant. Do you work in a restaurant?
I worked in supermarket delis for years.
That's even harder. Yeah. That's clearly harder.
Yeah.
Number one, make up your mind. Right? When people get up, this is not, you know, it's not Macy's. You should know what you're ordering before they get to you.
Baffled by the choices. Well, the problem was the old people like things sliced so thin they thought I was doing laser eye surgery behind the counter.
They're getting away with something. Look how many slices I got for the same price.
They would hold it up to the light.
Right. Whose idea was olive loaf? Have you ever talked to people?
Olive loaf, when I worked in the delis, I had an agreement with the other workers. I would not touch olive loaf or pimento loaf. Ah. I was so disgusted by it. I'd rather cut the head cheese.
Would you put your hands up and literally walk away?
We had a deal. I would not touch olive loaf.
And you'd rather cut head cheese than olive loaf.
Yeah.
Hey, Pete, could you chop that down for next time?
Yes. And I will say, I worked in the deli. I hated head cheese cutting. I despised
it. What's so bad about it? I don't get it. Like, what is head cheese?
Because head cheese is made – it is what it sounds like. They boil up a cow's skull. They scrape. It's something you shouldn't need to eat in a civilized country.
It's and all the bits and pieces, like the tongue and everything, is all held together by this gelatin. I had a customer – return it. They bring it back and they open it up and it was all mangled. They left it in the trunk of their car in the middle of the summer, so they wanted their money back, as if it was my fault that they left it in their trunk.
Right. And besides that, Eric, I don't think it bothers him at all. As if it's like, you think Pete just let that go off his throat? I don't think so. It didn't go off his throat.
It was horrifying. The worst was the darker one. It was just called Blood and Tongue. You've at least come up with a name.
Right.
That will
distract us. Am I going to do with the rest of this cow? We got the meat off it. Let's sell the skull and let's sell the tongue.
Yes. Not in a first world country.
Right. You know what? My dad used to make us have kidneys, which in retrospect, isn't that ridiculous? Isn't kidneys where you strain everything? You know the human body.
They've got a distinctive smell.
Right. I should have pushed back more.
Say you're not eating these leftover awful.
I also
thought awful.
I also want to bounce this off you too. And again, if anything sticks and it's on the show, I want full credit. All right, Mayor Adams has now announced the first annual increase in minimum rate for app-based restaurant delivery workers, now up to $19. So, number one, Joe DeVito, do you feel as though app-based delivery workers are underappreciated, underpaid? Which is really number two.
Yeah.
So I think this is number three. And do you think this is long in coming? Or are you outraged by the ripple effects from this? Less ordering, less tipping. Maybe people just don't do it.
I feel bad for anyone in New York City who has to leave their house to go to work.
Right.
Because it's just so.
Especially going to that bike lane. That bike lane is
terrifying.
The most dangerous.
Yeah. Well, in New York now, the stop signs and stop lights are more suggestions. There's no penalty for just blowing through them. So I can understand the people who deliver. Like, it's a very stressful job. But, yeah, this is part of this plan to just make everything more difficult because they can stick that on people who obey the law. People don't obey the law. You can't extract anything from them because they don't obey the law. It reminds me of the Stamp Act that inspired the American Revolution.
Just a second, Eric. Do you have any sound from the Stamp Act by any chance? Anything?
Yeah.
No, he does.
I'm fresh out.
You're fresh out. Nothing from the Stamp Act.
You don't have any clips of Joe Biden commenting on it from back?
He might have. He has a lot of AIDS jokes now.
He does.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like that's another example of they stick it to people who play by the rules because people play by the rules, unfortunately, are the ones you can do that to.
So, Joe, where do we see you do stand-up? You're everywhere, but you have to do it in New York, right? Because you have a job now.
I know, tragically. Yeah.
Because most comics are not doing much before they go up, right?
They wouldn't even be awake right now.
Right.
At Joe DeVito Comedy on social media, I've got this weekend I'm in New York City at the Comedy Shop. It's a newer room downtown. I've got Myrtle Beach coming up in May. I've got Bananas in Rutherford, New Jersey at the end of this month. I've got my whole schedule at joedevito.com.
So do you notice, since you're on Gutfeld as a writer and you're on the panel all the time, is it easier to sell tickets?
Absolutely. And I love the people who come out. It is funny when I go to Florida and the older demographic comes out.
What do you mean?
Well, I've learned they all want to take pictures after the show, and no one knows how to operate the cameras on their phones. So we have to bring over
a young person.
Yes, to keep the lines moving. Yeah.
So do you find that people, number one, it's good that they know you ahead of time, right?
Yes.
So is that a real – does it change what you do and how you do it, knowing that you're going to probably get laughs just the minute you walk on stage or
– Well, this
I'm not saying you don't earn it with your material, because I've seen you. You're a great stand-up.
This is what I've learned. If you're a left-leaning comic, you'll attract a left-leaning audience who wants to hear left-leaning material. If you do what I do and attract this audience, they just want to hear jokes.
Right.
So I don't need to go up. I'll rip on Biden a little bit if I'm in the mood. But they really are just there to laugh. They're not there for the lectures you get from left-leaning comedians.
Are you worried about taking on Trump by some of the crazy things he's done?
No, because if it's a joke, people appreciate it.
I mean, to me, I don't think there's anything funnier. I laughed out loud the first time I saw the mugshot on a mug. When I saw the trading card with Donald Trump's trading card get a piece of the suit that he was wearing when they took the mugshot picture, this would have killed anybody else's career. Let alone put him as a front runner.
There's no one like him. There's no one like him, and that's why, what am I going to do, exaggerate something he said? He's so far ahead of you on that we were laughing yesterday that everything about Trump is oversized, and then we see his son is turning into a giant.
6'7".
So, he's 6'7". What is he going to be, 11 feet tall? He's got the biggest, most tremendous son of all time. So for me, it's like, yeah, there's funny things you can say about President Trump, but I would rather – make fun of President Biden, because there's that deficit there where they're just coming around to poking fun of him at these other shows.
Did you notice that?
Yes.
They're now starting to talk
about it.
Right.
And I don't know if they finally have developed a comedic conscience about it, or – I mean, just Biden shuffling around in those hokas. He's the first president with a shoe deal. Really?
It is pretty unbelievable. But I also thought, you know, they just talk about – again, when he was on stage at Radio City, we only have 30 seconds, they said that he was the alpha. Really? With Joe Biden? Excuse me, with Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, he was the alpha taking command on stage? Does anyone believe that? It turns out there's no tape of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would like to see him strutting around where he can barely move. He's got that shuffle. It doesn't make Vladimir Putin sleepless at night.
Right, not yet. So, Joe, I enjoyed our time together, and what I like mostly is your commute. You literally went on the elevator and came here.
I did.
And now you have to get back to work. Does Gutfeld make you sign out?
No, but of course the door to the elevator opens and he's walking onto the floor.
And he's like, what are you doing?
I
better not be Kilmeade Show.
I had to act like I was going to the emergency room.
Any hit on me, does it come from you?
No, never. Of course not.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everyone. I have a few minutes before going outnumbered at the top of the hour, so I'm going to go over a few things that made me realize that there's more to know.
More to know.
Well, women's hoops, Caitlin Clark did what she was supposed to do. She led Iowa to a victory over LSU, a big rematch. She was the better player. Iowa was the better team. A comeback was made in the fourth quarter, but would not be enough. They did miss the national anthem, and the coach explained why, but now they're going to the Final Four. They'll play UConn next. Listen to the coach.
Coach, your team wasn't on the floor during the national anthem. First part, was that a conscious decision on your part? Second, can you say what the team was doing during that time?
Honestly, I don't even know when the anthem was played. We kind of have a routine where we are on the floor, and then they come off at the 12-minute mark. I don't know, and we come in and we do our pregame stuff. I'm sorry. That's nothing intentionally done.
All right, I buy it. Do you guys buy it?
Well, apparently this has been their routine, and it even goes back to last year when LSU actually was winning in the tournament. This is still happening, so this is part of the routine.
So they always miss the national anthem?
Yeah, most of the time they do, because they have a routine. Once they're done with their warm-ups, they walk back. I'm not defending. I'm just saying this is what they do.
Iowa, of all places, as patriotic as it gets.
No, it's not Iowa. It's LSU.
That missed.
Iowa was fine. It's LSU that missed the national anthem.
All right, my bad. Next. 40% of adults, go days without face-to-face interaction. This is pathetic. It was conducted by this place called One Poll. They commissioned by Zumba. They polled 2,000 British adults, and they found that a staggering 40% have gone 3 days without face-to-face conversation. Even more surprising, 28% report feeling lonely while at a social event, and a quarter have felt isolated at their workplace. This lonely in a crowd phenomenon seems to hit young adults the hardest, with 60% of those between 18 and 24 reporting feelings of loneliness. Women were also more likely to feel that way. 38 to 30%. Do you think this is just a UK problem?
No, it happens right here in the studio, right here with Eric and I. We have no conversation when I come in, if we pull audio.
But do you answer
I just
posters?
Get messages. I get messages from him. No face-to-face interaction, even now.
What about FaceTime? Does that count?
You know, maybe I should do that with Eric. I'm going to FaceTime you next time when him. I come in next time.
Next, J.K. Rowling dares cops to arrest her for misgendering trans people after new woke hate crimes pop up in Scotland. Quote, freedom of speech and belief are at the end in Scotland. If this is accurate description of biological sex is deemed criminal, she wrote on X. Quote, I'm currently out of the country, but if what I've written here qualifies as an offense under the terms of this new act, I look forward to being arrested when I return to the birthplace of the Scottish Enlightenment. Whether or not the police would think it was a crime is up to the police, Scotland, they say. But Scotland's hate crime law went into effect on Monday. It bans hatred on the basis of age, disability, race, religion, sexual orientation, and transgender identity. By passing the Hate Crime Public Order Act, Rowling said, politicians place a higher value on the feelings of men performing their ideas of femaleness, however misogynistically, optimistically, than on the rights and freedom of actual women and girls. Now, you're for this Scottish law, right, Eric?
A hate crime? Really?
A hate crime.
I know.
Put it this way. I don't need like to even answer emails that have pronouns on them. Do you get emails like that?
Yeah. Yeah, we get emails.
You get them like...
Sometimes they give us actually good guests. They do.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, put it this way. Can you make a moral stand, please?
Yes.
I don't want to do that.
I will cancel all guests.
Right. If Stallone's publicist calls up as a he or a she, is that wrong?
From Stallone's people, and they say, listen, we want Brian Kilmeade to be in the next Rocky movie because we're going to have a sequence where he does a radio interview setting up his next protege or whatever.
Right.
But the email comes with a he, she, or they,
I'm
them.
Out.
Then you're done.
Rocky 9, I will not be
you're
in.
Out.
Gen Zers are ghosting employers. They're not even showing up on the first day. A recent survey of the employment website Indeed found that 75% of the 1,500 UK workers polled have ignored a prospective employee in the last 12 months. That's crazy.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.